You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Makes it a two-point game.
Here's your mismatch right here.
Now it's Luka. Deep three on the Luka Magic!
Hello, welcome to 77 Minutes in Heaven, a Dallas Mavericks podcast that's part of the Athletic Podcast Network. You know me, you know Dave. We're here to talk about the Dallas Mavericks. That's why we call it a Dallas Mavericks podcast. It's subtle. I mean, right. a lot of what we do on this podcast is very subtle. So
yeah, you got to read between the lines a lot.
You know, we're walking between those lines, and let me tell you, there's not a lot of space between the lines. They are very close on an axis. We're not talking like an X and a Y axis here. Like these are...
Is it 94 by 50? It's like actually a good amount of space between those lines.
Yeah, I was going to say. Although less space when you are a 7-foot NBA athlete.
That is true. Less space when you lose Seth Curry.
Did you know that Nate Hinton, a favorite of the Mavs front office and Mavs fans, Mavs analysts, Mavs everyone. I mean, how can you not love a player who as a shooting guard averaged 9 rebounds in college?
Yeah, man. Hinton Hive over here.
He grew up playing basketball at his father's church on carpeted gym. The gym had carpet on it. And I talked to him about that. And I was like, it was small. It was, you know, he had to tape out the 3-point line. And by the time he taped out the NBA range 3-point line, he was about standing at the opposite free throw line or something like that. So,
Man, the different types of gyms I've played in, I definitely played in a carpeted gym. I played in a gym that had like tile for the court.
What?
Played in a gym that had spongy tile.
So that's what I was going to ask. Yeah, weird. That like what do they call that? Like Playtech, where
something like that.
You can like literally dig your fingernail into it and like.
But it was slippery.
I didn't remember it was really slippery.
It was odd. This one was odd.
The one I can remember was like a junior year basketball tournament, and it was like almost rubbery. It's almost a very weird surface. Very strange.
What kind of gym are the Mavericks playing in this year?
In a very empty one.
Empty.
Yeah. An echoey one. I mean, if you want a wonderful transition, they're playing in a gym very sadly without JJ Barea.
You know, we talked about this before it happened. It was really the logical move. I don't think anybody was surprised. Still sad though, man. Yeah. I watched his sort of his little press conference on the way out, and
I'll give the nut graph to this podcast, which I haven't done yet, which is Journalism Turns for what you're about to hear. I want to talk a little bit about Barea now in the past tense in terms of his Mavericks career, and definitively that he has moved on, and then we'll get into some rotation stuff and you know from an article I wrote, but we have to talk about Barea, you know. We can, like you said, we discussed logically why it had to be him. I think I said it on this podcast. I've certainly said it to some people. You know, I was hoping I was wrong. I was hoping it would be some other outcome. If I had just been a colossal dumbass who totally saw didn't see a path forwards for them to keep Barea and, you know, also make logical, smart roster moves, I would have just, you know, pranced around with clown makeup on my face for, you know, a week straight. I would have been fine with that. I was willing to be the clown if it meant Barea hanging around. But logically, it was the only path forward for the team and the roster and the moves they made. He's a legend, man. He is a Dallas Mavericks legend. And I don't think that can be said enough. Just everything that he has represented to this franchise.
You might not have a title in 2011 without Barea. Like, I think that there's an argument to be made.
I don't think there's an argument. I think it's stronger than that. Like, he was the definitive changing fact. I mean, it was I mean, I guess if there's an argument, the argument is to be made, it wasn't so much about Barea, but just changing, you know, putting a more dynamic player into the starting lineup kind of shifted the way that the offense ran and the game started. But that player was Barea, and he deserves the credit for that, right?
Does that make sense? No, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to look at that. But right. I mean, you know, obviously
he was there when the team needed him, when Carlisle needed him, he was the one that they turned to. And because of the way we view sports, which is, mm-hmm. you know, based about who was in the right place at the right moment, you can become a hero just by, you know, being standing in the right place.
I mean, he's the LeBron stopper.
Yeah.
Well earned. Yeah. Well deserved.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I feel like my big picture stuff is almost sounds like it's taking something away from Brian. That's the furthest thing from what I'm trying to do. I mean, just, you know, the way he broke through, I think the season I really started watching the Mavericks was the season he broke through, which was 08-09. He played a little bit 07-08, but I started watching them in 08-09. He started breaking through in 08-09. I remember he was a disliked player for internet message boards and Twitter users and you know, Mavs Moneyball communities and, you know, all those people tended to not love Barea because, you know, I guess at the time he was a little ball poundy and people would be like, look at the short dude. Like, there's no way he can play defense. And, you know, I think that it took me a while and to realize just how much better he made every player around him. Like, he, you know, the mastery he gained of an offense and just how to run, you know, just perfectly run a pick and roll. Something he really showed when he came back in his second stint and, you know, just his almost a magical ability to stop, start. You know, we talk about Luka and his hesitation, mm-hmm. James Harden and his hesitation. That's absolutely something Barea had, like one of his best qualities, you know, just like that quick acceleration. I don't think he was actually quite as athletic in that specific sense as Luka and kind of the stopping ability, but boy, he knew how to use it. Like it was a you know, just a mastery of a kind of a skill, which allowed him to really master the pick and roll, in my view, and that's what made him, you know, such a vital piece of this team for, you know, really six-ish seasons, something around there.
Yeah. No jersey retirement, right?
I think I would. It depends. You know, if he was a Laker, maybe not. You know, they're not going to retire Derek Fisher's jersey, right?
Sure.
But the Mavericks have had slightly lower standards, you know, and that is naturally, you know, what a team with less success would have. They have Derek Harper and they have Brad Davis, you know, two guards, you know, two journeymen or not really journeymen, like long time role playing guards who were pivotal to the, you know, to the team over decades. You could make an argument that those two players shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, and perhaps Cuban, you know, kind of has distanced himself from doing things like that, and thus Brea will not be shoot in. But he's absolutely as deserving as those two. And the fact that he was actually on a title team and was so instrumental there and all of that, you know, I think that he has a very worthy case. It's really just where you set the criteria. And if you want to set it higher, if you want to have a, you know, just an incredibly strict standard of what it takes to get a jersey retired, go ahead. That, by all means. I mean, it's a what you make of it. But he is a legend and a truly a Maverick who represents, you know, their franchise in so many moments and in so many ways that I would have no problem doing it. You know, there's what, 100 numbers that you can pick from?
Yeah,
you can pick from zero.
I
know
how to
do
math. Thing.
I know you can't do 100, like zero. Right. Really, there's 101. You can do 0-0 now, right?
Yes, you can do 00. I mean, that's the funny thing about the jersey retirement is that a lot of people think it needs to be some kind of a special thing and you only reserve it for Hall of Famers. But the truth of the matter is, man, I actually like when teams just retire guys that meant a lot to the organization for a good period of time. Even if you're not a great player, I think it's fine to retire those jerseys.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a Boston Celtics situation, right? Where you just, they had a league that had eight teams in it. So all the great players were, you know, basically consolidated in a couple of places. You've got a league, there's no way they're going to run out of numbers. I mean, eventually they'll retire 77. That's not taking a number from, you know, future generations, because not a lot of guys are wearing 77. Although that's probably going to change.
Maybe now.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably going to change. So, but yeah, I look, I'm not the type of person that really like gets upset about jersey retirements or anything like that. Now, tribute videos, oh, they hand those out too liberally. But JJ will get a really good one, so that'll
be fun. I mean, that's I think you just landed on it. Like, the team needs to appropriately honor and celebrate what Barea meant to this franchise in whatever way they see fit of doing that. I will leave that to them, but I demand that he is appropriately tributed, if you will. I think he does mean something. You know, it's not just that he spent 8 years here. Devin Harris spent 8 years here between his two stops, but he doesn't mean as much as someone like Barea. I think even the same goes for someone like Dwight Powell, an unfinished career. We'll see what happens, but I would lean towards pointing at Barea and just, you know, what he represented, the cult fandom that he ended up kind of bringing, the personality, what he did behind the scenes, all those things. And then, you know, I think crucially the pivotal role in the finals. When you combine all of that stuff, he means something more to this franchise than all but five or six other players. Maybe 10. I don't know. I guess I'd have to look at the list.
It might be more, but listen, this modern era, the championship, I think, yeah, retire the number. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I will retire the number if they don't. Nobody on this podcast will ever wear, what's his number?
Dude, I don't, yeah. I do not recognize like numbers. Like, there are like seven basketball numbers that I know. I know this is crazy. I know that most people can say every number of every player on the team and things like that. My brain does not work that way. He was number five. I just looked that up.
Yeah.
He was also number 11 for a period of time.
Here's my thing is like growing up, I definitely knew every number. Now I know these guys' faces. I don't care about the numbers.
Yeah. 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 And it's, I think especially basketball, like, you know, numbers more in football because they wear helmets, or soccer because your camera is further away from where the players are actually playing. Last thing on Barea is just that I do not plan for this to be the last time that I, you know, do stuff for theathletic.com that is trying to appreciate him. Hopefully with him in person, or not in person, but, you know, directly talking to him over appropriate internet means of communication about, you know, just some highlights from his career and things like that. So that's a hope. And hopefully that will come in time. And you know, if you want to be prepared for that, theathletic.com/77minutes in heaven. I think they still got a good deal there.
Buy one, gift one right now. So if you buy a subscription, you can send a gift to a loved one. Or, I mean, honestly, you flip the script. Send a gift to an enemy. Why not?
See, yeah, that's fair. You want to talk about rotations?
Let's do that. Because they've got some decisions to make while they're shuffling the deck chairs, waiting for Porzingis to come back. Honestly, like, I'm lower on them now than I was, you know, during the playoffs because of Porzingis missing time. I just think that they're going to be shorthanded. So I'm really curious to see how they handle those minutes in the front court.
In fairness to Porzingis, I can heavily relate with him delaying his surgery because he thought he had more time before the season starts.
Yeah, me too.
Frantically scrambling to get in 2 weeks of vacation.
I've got people doing construction inside my house because I was like, there's no way we're back to full time before January. There's just no way. So, yeah.
I mean, me taking a week of vacation last week and having people yell at me for not creating more Mavericks content is my version of Chris Tapp's delaying his surgery now being late. I feel more for Porzingis. That's honestly rough. Like, that's honestly such a bad turn of events for him in a year full of bad turn of events for everyone. I I agree. I mean, I think that pretty obviously, based off the first two preseason games, the team starting lineup will be Luka, Richardson, Finney-Smith, Hardaway, Powell.
Mm-hmm. It seems about right.
Yeah, they started both games with it. That there was some fluctuation last preseason, but this is not a normal preseason. This is not a preseason where you're, you know, toying around with ideas to see how they look together. This is a preseason where you pick your best five, you know, the five players you want to start, and you put them on the court together because they have barely played together, you know, for more than 7 days now or something like that. There is no time for, you know, messing around and trying different things. That will be the five that start, I am 99% certain. And I think that the only argument that can be made otherwise is whether if Powell continues to not be at his best, if he continues to be, you know, 60-70% of the player he is. Athletically, he looks all right in the first two games. I don't care what he looks like these first two games, except like getting to the regular season and we can start, you know, giving him more scrutiny then.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if he's 70% of the player he is for the first couple of weeks of the season, and Cauley-Stein is playing as well as he is, I would be interested in seeing what he looked like with the starting five as a, you know, just really energetic, perhaps mm-hmm. sometimes in the wrong ways, but an energetic five guy who can roll and dunk and shoot threes. Hit a couple threes in the preseason game.
I wonder if we might see some James Johnson at the five. I mean, he's big, sets good screens. You know, maybe you could sneak a couple minutes there if you want to get out and run a little bit. And you're not quite wanting to go to Cauley-Stein. I mean, you're going to give up a ton of rebounding, but you'll be hard to guard.
A really interesting Johnson idea that was told to me by Nate Duncan. I went on his podcast to preview the Mavericks.
Nate Duncan has a podcast?
I know. Crazy what the world's coming to. Can you believe this?
Yeah.
But Duncan was saying that, you know, as we talked about, and we've talked about this on our pod, on this pod, that, you know, the Mavericks are a little bit light on secondary ball handling. Mm-hmm. He was like, Johnson can be that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of clicked in my head, and I was like, oh, yeah, he can do that. And again, Johnson is you know, at best the 10th rotation player. He is not bringing the ball up the court, you know, 99% of the possessions. He is not, you know, he's not going to be a point guard. He's not even going to be as you know, good as, you know, hopefully Josh Richardson. But he is able to take the ball above the three-point line and do a few interesting things and be stable and create some things. And yeah, I like him with Luka, you know, as we keep thinking about how do we make sure that Luka isn't always burdened with doing everything within the starting five. I think we're looking pretty heavily at Josh Richardson. I'm very curious to see what he looks like as the season gets going and whether he can be more of a creative force than someone like Hardaway, someone like Finney-Smith. I think he can. I'm optimistic about that. But I think that James Johnson in the starting five is a good use of him, you know? Tossing him in there. I like him there. I like him with the starters. Like, I feel like he's the type of veteran mm-hmm. who has, you know, no usage, you know, you don't need to feed him. He has no, what's the word?
He's going to get his on the margins, right? Like,
yeah,
he is a Tony Graffanino, right? He is a utility guy.
How does that mean? Explain. Well,
Tony Graffanino was a great utility baseball player. Not great
no,
as
baseball.
In like Hall of Famer.
Moving on. Nope, but nope, don't care.
Utility guy, meaning...
Catalanato, though.
Oh, okay, there you go. So he can just do a lot of things, and he's not excellent or elite at any of them, but he does them all with competency. And just having those guys on a team that, frankly, isn't very deep, it's deep in like the small guard area, but nowhere else. And so just having a guy who can guard on the wing, who can kind of guard on the post, who can sort of slide over and help defense, who can sort of bring the ball up, who can sort of pass, who can sort of shoot. Like, those guys matter so much, in particular with this shortened offseason. He's going to be able to fit in much faster than any of the guys they drafted or I mean, potentially even guys coming back from injury because, you know, he's been healthy. So I think that he's going to be useful. And, you know, I read your article and we talked about him a little bit on the last show, I think. And we mentioned that whatever his role is in December, it's unlikely to be that in May. But he can get him to May.
Yeah, that's a good description of what he can be, what he should be. Like you said, you know, you're right that there's not a lot of, you know, when you start the season without Porzingis, with Powell needing to rest, with injury concerns, their big man depth does look lighter. When they're fully healthy, that's going to be a different story, of course. And as I kind of like physically built out a rotation, which is mostly worthless. I mean, the rotation is never going to look like this. You know, it's kind of more just a thought exercise to see like this is how it could play out. But as I built it out, one thing I realized is I was struggling to find enough minutes because I took a fully healthy roster. I was struggling to find enough minutes for Porzingis, Powell, and Kleyba. You know, three players who we think will all be in the, you know, in the regular rotation. If I started Finney-Smith at the four, if the starting lineup was what we expected to be on opening day, but Porzingis is instead of Powell, all of a sudden that's 12 minutes going to Finney-Smith to open the game, and he's playing as a nominal big man, and then I put Johnson in there as a power forward, and that sucked up 8 more minutes, and all of a sudden I'm playing Dwight Powell 20 minutes a night and Maxi Kleyba 24 minutes. And that's with a very generous 28 minutes for Porzingis, you know, trying to account for injury stuff and, you know, just overall reducing his workload. So that was the moment where I kind of came around on the idea of doing what the Lakers did last season, where you always, you know, during the regular season for most games, you have a big man next to Porzingis, you know, when he's on the court and healthy. I think the benefits are that you do get more minutes out of your all your bigs, like the six bigs you end up having. You know, you're able to kind of spread out the minutes better. And then there's the wear and tear stuff, which I don't know how much that is real or not. I'd be curious to ask a doctor, to ask a sports physiologist. I think that's something I will do next month, you know, as Porzingis starts coming back. But centers, you know, like star centers seem to always prefer that. They complain about, you know, the wear and tear of always playing center. So, mm-hmm. you know, at least it's a mental thing if they complain about it that much. So I think I'm okay with it. I think I'm fine with that. You can always work towards your best lineup and your best lineups, which will be, you know, which will always have Porzingis at center as the game goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay taking the first 6 minutes, and it's a preventative approach. It's a conservative approach to minute wear and, you know, wear and tear, like I was saying. I think that makes sense. I'm coming around on it. Yeah, you like?
No,
I'm
with you
here.
No, I'm with you. Look, the biggest thing in the NBA right now is just flexibility generally, right? Some nights you're going to start KP at center. Some nights he's going to play next to Powell. He might. There may be games where he is playing next to Boban from the start. That may happen, but that's a good thing. Right? Like, you want to be able to go through all these lineups, especially in this season. This is a team that expects to make the playoffs. I expect to see a fair amount of experimentation once they hit their stride, meaning everybody's healthy and they're trying to figure out their best lineups for the playoffs.
Right.
But I'm still worried about that first month. It's going to be interesting to see who steps up from a scoring perspective. I'm not sure that it's going to be any one person. It may be a few. Like, can Trey Burke play like he played in those really good games that he had in the bubble? That's going to be big. But,
you know,
and that'll help.
23 points from Josh Richardson in the second preseason game.
Well, that wouldn't hurt. That wouldn't hurt.
Nah.
But, yeah, I just think having that flexibility is important. And again, their guard depth can cover a little bit for some of the scoring and spacing that they get from Porzingis. So, you know, it might even be while he's out – they're still playing these, you know, generally smaller lineups with Dwight Powell as your center, like we've seen so far.
You coached a team once, right? Somewhere?
Yeah. I've coached basketball. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. How hard is it actually to make a rotation?
It's really difficult. It's really hard to make a rotation.
Like, have you forgotten players on the bench?
Yeah, sure. I mean, not everybody's going to play, number one.
Right.
But when you're trying to figure out a rotation, number one thing that you're trying to figure out is your lineup combinations and also everyone's, like, physical limitations. So if right. you've got guys that are well-conditioned, you know that you can leave them out there for longer stretches, and it allows you to buoy some of your second units. But if your guys aren't in good shape, then it gets to be a little bit trickier. I mean, this is one of the things that Miami has the benefit of. Everyone right. is in such good shape that they're able to really do some interesting lineup combinations because of how long, like Jimmy Butler can go play 14 straight minutes. Now, he doesn't do it often, but he can. And just having that flexibility from night to night is pretty important. And then obviously it changes based on matchup and stuff like that. But it's really, really hard when you're sitting down before that first scrimmage or that first actual game, you know, the night before, and you're sitting there drawing up your minutes and you're like, ooh, man, this player definitely is not getting enough minutes, but I don't know where I take them from. And then, mm-hmm. and then you go into the game and you throw that rotation out the window and you start coaching from your gut and somehow it works out.
That's funny.
I'll be honest. I've only actually followed a rotation that I drew up the night before a game. That was like part of my process. Night before, here's my expected rotation. If everything works out well, this is when our subs are going to be. The only time I made it past like this, you know, halfway mark of the second quarter, was in a game that we got beat by like 40 points. So it didn't matter. So I was like, all right, well, the work is done.
That's funny. I don't know if there's a rotation building tool out. I mean, the internet has so many fun little tools mm-hmm. like that. Like, it was hard. It was hard to actually create a lineup. And I think that people will have, like, you know, just a little bit more respect for all the juggling you have to do. And I'm sure for someone like Rick Carlisle, it is, you know, ingrained in his DNA at this point, you know, just knowing when to do, you know, when to tweak and pull the right trigger and, you know, call the right person and all that stuff. But, you know, I thought it was actually fascinating to kind of do this exercise. I'll leave us with one last topic. Do you have any strong opinions about Luka and Kristaps and which one should be subbed early to come back early and, you know, late in the first quarter, early in the second quarter and play with the second unit a little bit? Should they both be played together, you know, as much as possible?
I actually like what you did. I liked pulling Porzingis earlier and letting Luka get the second unit guys going. Again, this is about bridging gaps. So you leave Luka out there, and now all of a sudden you've increased the ceiling of the unit that's on the court.
Right.
While you're getting Porzingis rest. And this is why so often when you have teams with multiple stars, you will hear people like myself getting frustrated at the lack of staggering. Well, this is what staggering looks like. You kind of have, if I'm right, you have Luka playing about 10 first quarter minutes.
Yeah.
And then not coming back until about the 6 minute mark of the second quarter. He and Porzingis don't share the court together from 6 minutes in the first quarter until 4 minutes in the second quarter, four
Correct.
Minutes left in the second
Correct.
Quarter. And so what you're actually doing there is you're having one of your best players on the court at all times. That's huge. And then you're having them play pivotal moments, start of the game, coming out of the going into the half, coming out of the half, and end of the game together. And you're sneaking rest here and there. I think that's great. You know, those guys allow your second units to tread water and potentially even, you know, just mix up the look and gain an advantage. And then you play them together and you're able to capitalize on having both of your stars together. It sounds so obvious when you sit here and just you say it out loud, but there are so many coaches that do not stagger just as a general rule, and they've been shot in the foot for it.
Yeah. The reasoning for me was, you know, everything you said. I think that Luka makes Hardaway better. We have very concrete evidence of that. So I tried to stick Hardaway and Luka. I tried to overlap their minutes as much as possible. And then to a slightly lesser degree, I tried to overlap Richardson and Doncic's minutes, because I think that's going to be another very symbiotic relationship where both of them are boosted. What they do on the court will be boosted by each other. And for Porzingis, he has such a you know, even when he doesn't have the ball, he has such a spacing impact on an offense just by the way he pulls out, you know, the big man out to the perimeter. And not just pulls him out a little ways, like pulls him all the way out because people are scared to leave Porzingis open. And that has such an impact. I think that if the Mavericks take a step back offensively this season, it will be because Porzingis misses a month or 2 months mm-hmm. or whatever with injury. But it will be, you know, the other reason would be because the second unit takes a bit of a step back. And I think making sure Porzingis gets some minutes with the backups is crucial. Just to make sure, you know, to buoy them, you know, mm-hmm. just to make sure that, you know, they still have space to operate. They still got, you know, that star guy to lean on if they need to. So that was my thinking. I think it makes sense. I think what you said about it was smart. So
I think Porzingis and like Burke, Brunson, like the smaller guards, that's actually, it's pretty good. And it's a lot of speed.
I like that, right?
It's a lot of speed in the pick and roll. And you know, he's going to space the floor. It's not bad. It's a good thing. It's at least worth, again, playing around with in the regular season. It should be, you know, very experimental once they figure out who they are.
Yeah, and Carlisle, it's interesting. Carlisle did the opposite last season for the most part. When he was staggering, it tended to be Luka who came out early. But I don't know. I just like Kristaps Porzingis better. And I think that either player, as long as you stagger one or the other, I think that's the right option ultimately. It's just easier because, you know, the two bench guards, Brunson and Burke, you probably don't want to play both of them with Doncic, and both will come off the bench. So I think that's why that's the biggest reason why, you know, I think Luka is the one who plays longer and then sits until late. So I think that's all I have. I think we can make that the ender, if you will.
Yeah. 1 week. We're back.
1 week. Wow. Yeah. That is correct.
Yeah. And you've got Fast and Furious happening in the background right now, which is
you heard that? We've got a whole street racing thing here in Dallas.
Nice.
I know.
I'm going to come down. We'll wear our masks and watch some street racing.
Media will be allowed into the American Airlines. We got those emails today. So today being Tuesday, I don't know why that would matter to anyone, but. It's that thing where, like, on a podcast, when you say today, you're always supposed to.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I know.
You're supposed to be like,
oh, it now.
Yeah, you got to qualify when it was, and then I just realized I qualified it for something that what
doesn't
day
matter.
It happened has absolute no meaning to anyone who's listening to this podcast.
Kent, I apologize.
Keep that one in there. That is a good blooper. This is preseason for all of us. Luka airballed twice in the game last night. Mm-hmm. Who are we to not have a few air balls throughout this podcast? And with that, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Oh my God! Oh! Shut it down! Oh, no! Let's go home! It's a wrap, dude.
Man, that is a wrap.